Support for Impact Cincinnati comes from Murray and Robin Sinclair.
Good morning. This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. After Ohio's redistricting was completed this year, many complained the process was too partisan. Ohioans now will have a chance to voice their opinions on redistricting on Election Day with State Issue 2, which would create a commission to redraw state and federal legislative districts rather than leaving it to lawmakers. Joining me this morning to discuss the proposal are Hamilton County Democratic Party Chair Tim Burke and Director of Team 12, a local Republican grassroots organization, Attorney Jonathan Deaver. You can join in the conversation, too. Email your questions to impact@wvxu.org. or post them on our Facebook page. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Marianne.
Good morning.
Certainly glad to have you here. I think a great place to start is just to explain what we have now and basically what the issue two changes would be. And either one of you can start.
What we have now is a two-part system for determining what districts will look like in the state of Ohio. The district lines for state House and state Senate races are set by the apportionment board, which is composed of a number of the elected officials and at this point dominated by the Republican Party. It's the state legislature itself which draws the district lines for congressional districts.
Jonathan?
And the folks that that make these decisions, just to be clear, within our Constitution right now, we have three folks, our governor, who we directly elect, we have our Secretary of State, and our auditor. So these are constitutionally designated individuals that make these choices, and as voters, we pick that. And then in addition, the Constitution sets forth two other individuals that serve on this board. One comes from the Democratic caucus, either from the House or the Senate, based on the party's leadership, and same for the Republicans. So there's always going to be a minority and a majority party from our House and Senate caucuses on that board, and then we have our statewide folks that are constitutionally required to make these decisions. So historically, you can see going back, one of the things I like to do is use Wikipedia, and you kind of Google the political history of Ohio. You can go back all the way to the founding of the state, and you can see that, you know, we are such a bellwether state that every 10 years we have these shifts, and sometimes Republicans are in control of these boards, and sometimes the Democrats are.
And with the change, it would be very different. It would not be these elected officials. There would be a commission. Now, Tim, do you want to explain
it? It would
a little
be
bit?
Entirely different. It would be similar to something that's been done now in about five other states in this country, designed to ensure that both congressional and state legislative districts become competitive races. Too many of our districts today are simply not competitive, and we can talk about exactly what kind of impact we've seen just here in Hamilton County with our congressional districts. But the way it would work is that a number of judges from Court of Appeals around the state would be appointed by the Ohio Supreme Court to, in essence, draw, ultimately by lot, the members who would serve on a new districting commission. They would accept applications from anyone. They would be required to consider applications both from Republicans, from Democrats, and from non-involved citizens, the neutrals, if you will. And ultimately, they would choose a dozen from each of those three groups and then draw by lot three people, three Republicans, three Democrats, three neutrals. And those nine people would then select the additional three members of the commission. And that commission would draw both the congressional and the state legislative districts.
Now, I do have a question. I'm going to get to this early, and then, Jonathan, I'll let you respond here. From Carl, who was asking for some analysis of the details, he says he's in favor of creating a nonpartisan commission to do redistricting, but I'm not sure I understand the selection process described or the impacts and reason for the repeals of constitutional requirements on districts in Section 4.
One of the things I think is important to point out when we're having this conversation, too, is that I don't think there's anyone that is opposed to having a good dialogue about addressing the partisanship that goes in this process. I think both Republicans and Democrats are willing to have this conversation. I know prior to the 2010 election, where it looked like Governor Strickland would win unanimously, the polling was in that way. Mr. Husted proposed a solution to kind of address this, and it was rejected. And this initiative, honestly, isn't about a bipartisan effort. I mean, the gentleman who wrote this, it was exclusively his baby to write. And one of the things that I think is important is if we're going to have this discussion, we should also be honest about how the process is going to work and how the statute is written. I think that's really the most important part, because it's bad law. It's taking away a right that we have as a citizen, and it's replacing it with an unelected board. So this board will be appointed. Within the statute, there's a language that says necessary. So kind of getting to his point, necessary spending. So these folks can choose their own attorneys, choose their own staff, spend money as they believe is necessary to carry out their duties. And we know that this is a 10-year thing. So every 10 years, they spend about 6 to 8 months, depending, to create these lines and draw these lines. And there's nothing in the statute that withholds or limits their power, nothing that limits the ability of them to their spending. And so because it's a constitutional change, this is permanent. So if we do this, it's a permanent change. And you're looking at a group of unaccountable, unelectable people that are not going to be, we don't have a say in who these folks are as voters. I think back to Tim's point, too, he had mentioned that, you know, the judges are going to pick this. I think it's important to point out that we're both attorneys, and I know we're both members of the Ohio State Bar Association. The Ohio State Bar Association always stays out of political issues. They just stay out of it because it's clearly not in their best interest, and it's not in the best interest of attorneys, especially our associations and bar associations, to take positions on this stuff. And they've come out and made it very, very clear that they think this is bad because it's putting judges into a position where they believe there will be a separation of powers issue. It is possible, mm-hmm. under the way this is going to work, that the Supreme Court will pick the redistricting plan if this panel can't agree. And then as a lawyer, I know if I'm going to a judge who already picked the plan and I've got to litigate that plan in front of that same judge, it's not really it's a true conflict of interest.
Tim, your response?
Well, first of all, to the point that the caller asks about, the constitutional amendment would provide for very specific controls over how districts are to be drawn. First of all, they have to make their best efforts to ensure that communities are preserved. That is, you don't divide and split communities up. You try and keep them in the same districts. You ensure that the districts that you are drawing are competitive, and that's clearly one of the things that is not happening today. We get many congressional districts, for example, that are drawn in such a way as the first congressional district is today. Steve Chabot, if these district lines stays the same, Steve Chabot will remain in the United States Congress for as long as he is alive and keeps running, because it is not a competitive district for a Democrat to be a candidate in. The commission would also be required to ensure that the districts are compact. I mean, today we've got a congressional district that literally runs almost from the northern point of Ohio down along the eastern border, almost all the way to Portsmouth, Ohio. We've got a congressional district along the Ohio northern coast of Lake Erie.
Looks like a barbell.
Looks like a barbell, and you can't even see how they managed to connect that district. They did it so they could force two Democratic incumbents to run against one another. These districts are no longer competitive. They don't ensure that candidates will actually compete with one another on any kind of a fair basis. This amendment would fix that. To the point of judges being involved in selecting people to serve on commissions. First of all, the judges are reviewing potential members of the commission. Then the actual members themselves are drawn by lot. So the judges aren't picking their friends. But the fact of the matter is, in many cases under Ohio law today, we have judges who appoint people to public office. Just here in Hamilton County, our courts appoint members to the Hamilton County Park Board, to the Cincinnati Metropolitan Housing Authority, to the Library Board. It's not at all unusual for judges to take a role in appointing individuals to serve in public service.
Except there is one major difference between the examples that you've given and what we're asking the judges to do. Inherently, this is a very political process. It always is every 10 years. Depending on who's in charge, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, this is a political discussion. These are political decisions. You're making a decision on who's going to run in which district and what their voters are going to look like and what the percentage and the demographic and the makeup is going to be. So these are political decisions, and judges do not want to be involved in that process. They just absolutely don't. And asking them to be involved in this process constitutionally is going to create a lot of problems. I think you'll see, we were running through some hypotheticals, worst case scenarios, which we kind of do as lawyers. And, in the event that the Supreme Court has to pick a plan, you're litigating in front of the Supreme Court. Where's it going to go? The Supreme Court of Ohio, it's going to go to the Supreme Court. And if they agree that it's a separation of powers issue, then we're right back to where we started. And so my philosophy on this is very simple. We've got a constitutional amendment that we're asking the voters to consider. We're taking away our rights as individuals to select the people that make these decisions. The law as it's written, right now it's vague, and it allows them to be unchecked. There's no check and balance on these folks. There's no way of oversight on these people from the public's perspective. We don't have some independent ethics committee watching these folks. There's no watchdog group. They have an unlimited spending check. And right now, when I walk out my front door, I'm more concerned with whether I can fill the potholes in my street. I'm more concerned with whether, the nurses at the schools that we're arguing about, whether we have funding. I'm more concerned that we've got funds for those, or our Brent Spence Bridge. And right now what we're asking is to take money from a general fund to go into a plan that really, in concept, might be a good idea, but it's a poorly written law, and it's bad for us for that reason alone.
This question comes from Mark, who says, I'm concerned about the apparent lack of restrictions on the commission's budget. I think this is going to what Jonathan was saying. How do we ensure that this isn't a political slush fund with very deep pockets? And what is the process to remove people from the commission that fail to live up to their responsibility? And Tim, I'll let you handle that.
Well, first of all, I think this whole issue of funding is really a red herring, because we're not, in the end, the job of this commission is very time limited. It's not a perpetual fund. It only happens, as Jonathan has pointed out, once every 10 years. The individuals appointed are not going to be politicians. In fact, the proposed constitutional amendment restricts and prohibits any members from serving on the commission who are current elected officials, who have run for state or federal office in recent years, who have been active within their parties or been public employees in many different categories, or been a member of those individuals' families. So we're talking about getting appointed to the commission regular people, not political hacks like myself. I wouldn't be somebody who would be considered by the commission. It's to be a nonpartisan commission designed to give us the real opportunity to have challenging elections between the parties. That's why the Republican Party is so adamantly opposed to this. They want to guarantee that for the next 10 years, they can control the Ohio House, the Ohio Senate, and the congressional delegation from Ohio.
Back to his question, the reality is that we're putting in place a constitutional provision that says necessary. So the argument is going to be, we can spend this money because it's necessary. We all know that when bureaucracies are created, they take on whole new lives of their own past the original intent. We also know that the legislature is typically responsible for issuing funds. So if the legislature, which is probably going to happen, limits the amount of money, there's going to be litigation that's going to occur in the event that this panel doesn't agree. And what does that mean? That means the taxpayers will be supporting the legal fees on both ends. So going to that, yes, the way it's written, it's unlimited. There's no limitation on what they can spend. There's no oversight. There's no requirement that these folks only work 1 year in 10. There's no limitations on what their power is. It's kind of a broad language. It's not narrowly written.
Is there a time limit as to how long they can they can serve in terms of, A, are they on for the rest of their life every 10 years? And is there a time limit in which they have to come up with the districts?
There's no limit on their ability to serve their length of service in the constitutional amendment as it's proposed. There is no limitation.
But is there not some law? Maybe
they have to come up with the districts after the census is finished. before the next election.
Correct.
And they have established in the proposed constitutional amendment the dates by which that has to occur.
So that there is a time frame for how long.
Yes, and there currently is a time frame as well now, currently.
Right.
Yes.
So it has to be done in time for,
yeah,
for the next
election. I don't believe that time frame's changed at all. It's the same time period.
I agree.
Yeah.
Now, what about in terms of, you talk about they don't ever get removed. Do those same people then stay on for the next census?
Or
do
I'll tell you the way that I read this is it happens with each census. You establish a commission.
So the commission, in your mind, would be reestablished every time?
Correct.
And I can see from the plain reading of it that you could litigate that, and there's an argument to be had where these folks could serve indefinitely. So to me, going back to this, I mean, the whole point from my perspective is this is just poorly written language. Right now, as a voter, as a citizen, I have a right to choose the folks that serve on this board. We always hear every 2 years, every 4 years that elections have consequences. 2 years ago, when this proposal was brought from the other side, it was shot down. Now it's brought back in front of us, saying that this is a citizen initiative. It's not. I mean, I don't know of any citizens on the street that would think apportionment is a number one priority in their life where they want a constitutional amendment to make a change there.
Well, let's be clear. This is a citizen initiative. It's how it got on the ballot here. Hundreds of thousands of people signed an initiative petition to change the Constitution to put this on the ballot.
And hundreds of thousands of people signed other petitions to put other things on the ballot, but it doesn't mean that it was a citizen initiative at the grassroots level where citizens went out of their way to do this. We have to be honest about who's backing it and who's supporting it. From my perspective, having a conversation about altering these issues is fine. I think that's a good conversation to have. It's a good idea to have these conversations. I mean, I would agree with you that if my congressman lived literally 100 miles away from where I am, because my district's so out of tune to where I am geographically, I would have a legitimate discussion with you that seems nonsense. It seems like it's nonsensical.
And yet, your political party did exactly that in the way they drew the congressional lines and in the way they drew the state House and state Senate lines.
And when the Democrats were in control, they did the same thing years before. So
how many decades ago was that? The fact of the matter is, until 2008, when the Democrats managed to take control of the Ohio House, it was apparently the first and only time in history when an out-of-power party was able to change the majority in either the House or the Senate in districts that had been drawn by the opposite party. That's the problem with the current system that we have. That's why the League of Women Voters took the principal lead in supporting this initiative petition.
I understand what you're saying, and I'm not disagreeing fundamentally that there is a problem. But what I'm suggesting is that this law, as it is written, does some things that are not very good. It's not a very clear-cut, concise rule, concept. I mean, this is a constitutional amendment. This is a permanent change. I'm not excited about, as myself being a voter, I'm not excited about taking away my rights to choose my governor, to pick at least three of the folks that are on this panel. I'm not really overly excited about giving a blank check to individuals and having a litigation match between the legislator and this panel. Not really interested in taking money from a general fund to fund these folks when we have really serious budget problems in our state and around our country.
And we have to take a break. I'm going to interrupt right now, and we will continue our discussion. If you have a question, email it to us at impact@wvxu.org. Better yet, post it on our Facebook page.
Support comes from Wright State University's MBA program in Mason. Classes meet every other weekend beginning in January, and now MBA foundation courses are offered online. Learn about this nationally ranked program from the Raj Soin College of Business at an information session on Saturday, October 20th. Details at wright.edu/business.
Support comes from Gallery 1-1 at Brazy Street Studios, hosting an opening reception of Dissonance, an exhibition of photographic work on glass by West Coast artist Carrie Iverson, part of Photo Focus, Friday, October 12th, 6 to 9 p.m. to view prints on glass and a room-sized camera obscura. Also part of Open Studios every second Friday at Brazy Street Studios.
Support for WVXU is provided by Skanska, a construction manager dedicated to providing sustainable and innovative construction solutions for clients in the Cincinnati area. More information is available at usa.skanska.com. That's usa.skanska.com.
This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking today about Ohio Issue 2. It's a redistricting amendment, my guess. Director of Team 12, a local Republican grassroots organization, Attorney Jonathan Deaver, and Hamilton County Democratic Party Chair Tim Burke. Again, if you have a question, post it on our Facebook page or email it to impact@wvxu.org. We have a number of questions. I'm going to try to get to a few of them here. This question is from Craig, who says, how does the proposed amendment prevent political parties from manipulating the outcomes?
Well, for one thing, political parties will not be directly involved in this at all. While the commission will be composed of an equal number of Democrats and Republicans, the controlling bodies are likely to be the nons, that is, the people who have had no involvement in political parties at all. And from that standpoint, it will be very different than the way the process works today. It truly will be a nonpartisan result.
And I would tend to say, I think when he's saying directly, yes. Indirectly, absolutely not. Indirectly, we've already seen there's several states that have a panel. One is Arizona, another is California, Washington, Hawaii, Idaho, New Jersey. And when you look at the history of these states, what happens eventually is that one of these states, one of the political parties in that state gets a hold of it, and they run the gamut for a long period of time. The other thing that I don't really like about this is that it excludes other types of parties. So green parties, libertarian parties, we're only recognizing Republicans, Democrats as a constitutional provision. We're not recognizing other parties, and there's no provision. Imagine a scenario which is possible where one of the major parties isn't a major player and is replaced. They won't have a say in how this works. So there's some limitations to the laws that's written. And right now, we know who's doing it. We can point a finger directly at it because we see who these folks are. When you go to an unappointed, unelected panel, there's no control, there's no oversight right now. So we don't know what's going on indirectly. And that's kind of the problem with the way this thing's written.
Well, let's make it clear that one of the things that the Ohio Constitutional Amendment does provide is to make everything very transparent. Every meeting is public. All the information provided is publicly accessible, which is very different from the way things operate today, when all of these things are done behind closed doors without the public being involved.
This is from Stewart. How much is spent now contesting and defending the extremely partisan maps that are drawn under the current plan?
I don't have an exact number of that, but clearly hundreds of thousands of dollars are spent by the state legislature right now just to draft their plans. There's no question about that. It is an expensive proposition, even when it's controlled by the legislature or by the apportionment board.
Did the question go directly to the cost of defending it, or was it the cost of implementation?
This was about the defending the current system.
Yeah, I guess it's based on the billable hour. Wouldn't that be a fair statement?
from an attorney.
Yeah.
Rebecca wants to know, how is the commission funded now? And of course, there is not a commission necessarily now, but the apportionment board
yeah, is funded by the state legislature.
Right, which comes out of the general fund
right now. And they want to know how that would be different under this proposal.
It would not be different.
It's funded the same way. The only subtle difference would be that the Constitution changes so that this board, this 12-person board, can spend whatever they deem necessary.
And the apportionment board is in that same position. And frankly, we have lots of offices in the state of Ohio where the law is currently written that says you're supposed to get as much money as you need to do your job. We've got judges here in Hamilton County who are saying that kind of thing today to our county commissioners. It doesn't mean there's going to be litigation over that. But is it theoretically possible? Yeah, I suppose it is. It has to be adequately funded, but that doesn't mean unreasonably funded.
Becky wants to know, she says, I'm concerned about the choosing of the independent members of the commission. What are the eligibility requirements for those independent commissioners?
The independent commissioners, as with all of them, submit resumes to the panel of Court of Appeals judges. They review those. They select a number of them. I believe it's 14. And from that number, then, three people are drawn by lot.
But if you actually look at the language, it actually gives you some specifics as to people not eligible.
Yes.
If you donate, as an example, if you donate $4,999 to, quote, a candidates within the party, you're eligible. But if you donate $5,000, then you're ineligible. But you could take the same $5,000 and give it to a PAC who could give it to a candidate or series of candidates, and you're still eligible. So there's kind of all these different structures on how you can be eligible or ineligible. As an example, if you're a paid lobbyist, you're ineligible. But if you're actually the person that paid the lobbyist, you're eligible. So the rules are a little strange there, and the definition of independent is easy to work around. So I'm more of a person that believes that if we're going to be honest about it, it should be even down the middle. You have both major parties have an equal say in the process. And then you go to a supermajority of that panel, which is not what this says.
You know, it's easy, as Jonathan is doing, to try and nitpick this proposal. The question is, does this proposal provide a better set of competitive districts than our current system does? And I think the answer has to be yes. When you look at how we have gerrymandered state to preserve the Republican dominance in Ohio for the next 10 years, it's easy to see that this proposed system would produce, with its requirement to create competitive districts, which would clearly be stated in the Constitution, it's going to produce better districts than we have today.
But Tim, the reality is you are suggesting that this is independent and that this is nonpartisan. This is partisan because this is politics. When you decide where someone is going to be running, where a judge is going to be running, where a congressman is going to be running, it's never independent. It is a partisan process. The reality is right now, the voters, choose who these folks are. We're taking that away from the voters if we pass this. That's the first problem with this. The second part of this is that it's not written in a way that's going to guarantee the results that we're discussing, that we want to have.
It does have a constitutional requirement that districts must be competitive. The current Constitution doesn't have that. Now, presumably, and I think as lawyers we can agree, that when they are instructed by the Constitution to create competitive districts, that's what they're going to do.
I want to get one last question before we run out of time. This is from Adam, who says, giving the power to choose what district maps look like to any political party is subject to abuse. A bipartisan panel is a good beginning. And for anybody that goes, the bipartisan panel is just looking to keep, goes against the bipartisan panel is looking to keep their party in office. Your response to that?
Well, I mean, honestly, I think the most honest thing about this is that, you know, within the last 2 years, we've seen both parties take different positions on this issue. And prior to the election with Mr. Kasich and Governor Strickland at the time, this was a discussion that was brought by Mr. Husted, and it was shot down. And now, you know, because it looked at the time that it was going to be. This is always an issue of which party's in power. It always has been, always will be.
Would you support this if the Democrats were in power right now?
Yeah, I think I would, because I favor competitive districts. But this is an issue that's going to be debated. Actually, the Democratic Forum is hosting a debate next week on the 16th at the Contemporary Arts Center with Dave Pepper and Bill Seitz. And I think that will be a very entertaining debate to see on this very important issue that not enough people understand yet.
And I think one of the other realities, too, is that if we're going to have this discussion, I think it's best that everybody's at the table when it comes to drafting something like this rather than just one individual or one individual group. I think it'd be better that if we have a real conversation about how to set this thing up with both sides involved and even some of the independent parties involved in this process. I mean, right now,
do you think something does need to be? Are you saying then you think something does need to be changed?
I would agree that when we get districts that look the way they look, it does create problems. It creates arguments amongst Republicans and Democrats, especially folks that can meet eye to eye on 80-90% of the issues and move things forward. It creates those types of emotional problems. I think it's better if we both sit down and have a conversation about how to do this in a way that's fair, it's balanced, and it also preserves the rights of the voters to have a say in this process. Right now, we've got a say, and with this changing, we won't.
One quick question. Yes means yes and no means no in this one. If you vote yes, you're in favor of it. If you vote no,
yes means yes.
Right. Issue 2 is bad for you.
That's right. Vote yes on issue 2.
Thank you so much, both of you, for being here today and having a very civil discussion. We appreciate it. And thank you for listening to Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. My guest today, Hamilton County Democratic Party Chair Tim Burke and Director of Team 12, a local Republican grassroots organization, Attorney Jonathan Deaver. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier.